Yeah, so my name is Marios. This is my first postdoc. I recently got my PhD from Stanford, and I'm working mainly on BSM physics and BSM phenomenology. So some of my past research, I've worked on axions and axion dark matter. This is meant to say like pseudo-scalar particles, but mainly in the limit where you can think of them as wave-like. So for example, with collaborators, I'm already here at PI, such as Mina and Luis, we've proposed the large misalignment mechanism, which is, you know, regular misalignment. Oh, I guess there's no, the Canadian way. Right, so the regular misalignment picture that people usually use for axion dark matter is you have some field which has some order one value, and it starts oscillating early when its mass enters the horizon. But if you have some sort of a potential, then you can think of it as in a classical oscillator that is very close to its unstable equilibrium. If you are exactly on the equilibrium, then you never move, right? Because it's still an equilibrium. But if you are just a tiny bit away, then you sort of stay there for a long time, and then you start oscillating in the potential world. So this is what large misalignment does. It has some sort of sine of cosine potential. You start very close to the top, and so you can extend the initial time when your field is constant while the universe expands. So you stay with more energy density for more time, which means that you can have more time to grow perturbations. And so the bottom line of this idea is that you can start collapsing earlier than you would do in CDM. So this is essentially the perturbation in some scale that collapses earlier, as you see from the black line, compared to CDM that collapses later. And this can lead to enhanced structures exactly because you collapse earlier. Something else which is not, that would be related to dark matter, but something else that is not related to dark matter is black hole superradiance, which is a very interesting phenomenon where you can have superradiance. And if a scalar field exists in the Lagrangian with the right mass, then it will be produced around black holes. This is just a statement that Kerr black holes are unstable to growth of these scalar particles just if they exist, so independent of any pre-existing abundance. And so you have some potential for your axion, you know, as Luna showed, if you have a non-relativistic particle, then essentially, if you have some certain, it obeys the Schrödinger equation, and if you have some central mass, the potential is 1 over r, and as everyone knows, the 1 over r potential has bound orbits. So you grow this particle, and it stays there around the black hole. And because it extracts a huge amount of energy and angular momentum, it's actually pretty massive and pretty dense, so it can give rise to all sorts of signatures. Now, what this is superradiance is very old, but recently realized that it can be used for BSM physics in this way. And what we did is again assume some form of self-interactions. So again, some sort of cosine potential. And while before you could have, say, the lowest energy level in your hydrogen atom, the lowest allowed energy level, now you can have more. That grow at the same time because there is energy exchange now. Because you have some self-interaction, some cosine, you have some phi to the fourth, to leading order, right? And so you get energy exchange between particles, you get scattering in some sense. And this can lead to all sorts of signatures, such as radiation of these particles that you can see on Earth with direct detection experiments, or gravitation wave just by the fact that you have an oscillating quadrupole around your black hole. And again, this could be, these are observable at LIGO, so you can even set constraints right now. I've also worked on some more particle dark matter, more traditional particle dark matter models, which is meant to say, by this I meant to say very loosely, like above an MeV, for example, maybe a GeV or a few GeV, such as this one. So gravitational production of particles is also a very old topic, decades old, where you can essentially produce bosons from inflation if they somehow violate scale invariance. So for example, this is how you would produce the stochastic gravitational wave background that we talk about from inflation. But you can also source other particles such as scalars, which are usually constrained because of isocurvature and stuff. But you can also produce vectors, so essentially electric fields. And because these electric fields, you produce them and they are very, very energetic, if you have a fermion in your theory, it will essentially lead to Schwinger percreation. Just in regular QED, if you go to very, very large fields, then you can per-produce fermions. So we can have gravitational particle production of dark sectors where you'd think you get no fermions just by the fact that you know, there are no perturbative effects happen that lead to fermion creation. And then the last thing I've worked on is collective effects of dark matter scattering astrophysical media, again, astrophysical probes. So very roughly, when people thought of scattering in, say, stars, they did a 2-2-2 scattering, so something like that. But there are effects that people missed, which is collective effects. So if your thing has a long-range mediator, for example, it can get screening from plasma effects, just like regular QED plasmas. Or you can scatter off collective mode. So a white dwarf, for example, looks very much like a metal. You can scatter off a phonon, for example, in a white dwarf. And this, of course, changes these stories. In 1 minute, I'm going to say what I'm interested about, which is completely different and sort of not BSM-like. So we are interested with collaborators with Mass at the University of Washington, Barry Akhtar, and Neil Weiner and Ken Van Tilburg at NYU to propose a new sort of telescope. So this is based on a, again, very old effect, which is called Hanbury-Brown and Twiss effect, where if you have two telescopes looking at two stars, the naive expectation for each telescope is that the average intensity will be just the sum of the intensities of the two stars. But in fact, there is, if you have two telescopes and calculate the correlation of the two intensities, there is some non-zero, correlation. So instead of being one, it's one plus something. And this comes exactly by the fact that you are essentially somehow, this is some sort of interferometry, but it's an interferometry of intensity. So you are sort of correlating the cross paths with the straight paths, and you're getting some extra correlation. So this was known. And the main point is that you get this cosine, so you can measure, say, if you fit what you measure in this function, you would measure the relative angle of these two stars to a very good precision, 1 over kd, where now k or omega would be optical compared to radio, right? It's a very much smaller smaller wavelength. So you can get a much better precision, which is microarseconds. It's very good. But also your field of view, because of this exponential, is very small. So the trick is to expand the field of view. And we can do this with a mirror. So if you had the mirror in front of one telescope and you artificially change the light path of one of the stars, then you can keep the same precision, but your theta, your field of view, will now expand. And essentially, you're changing this exponent to theta d minus 2l. And the bottom line is that you can measure big separations on the sky with very good precision, relatively big separations with very good precision. And this is good for astrometric macrolensing. So you have two stars, one lenses the other. You can measure very, very small changes in positions because you measure with such good accuracy. And measure stellar masses, for example. And it can be used for lots of other things like exoplanet detection. Say you have some Jupiter-like around the star wobbles a bit, you can see that, and other things. So in general, this is what I'm working on now. But in general, I'm excited about any BSM phenomenology in astrophysics, cosmology, or lab, and anything that is potentially measurable. And this slide is deliberately kind of devoid of information, because who knows what the next idea will be until you find it. Thank you.
No questions? So what field of view can you get?
Right, so the field of view is about an arc second, maybe half an arc second. The upper limit comes from at the atmosphere. So if you have the two light rays going in, passing through different patches of the atmosphere, then they have uncorrelated fluctuations. And so this washes out your signal. So you essentially, you need them to pass through the same patch of the atmosphere. And this sets the one arc second limit.
How big is the mirror and telescope assembly, if you want?
This is something we're working on. So the actual configuration, it's not out yet. So what we're envisioning is having, you know, maybe a 10 meter disc telescope. You can also do smaller, or many small telescopes, say many 1 meter dish. And the idea is to have some sort of parabolic plate and focusing, some sort of, two parabolic plates and, some photodetector here, and you could some photodetector here, and then the light rays would focus here in this way, right? And then you could put your mirrors here. You don't need to have them like as big as a telescope. You can have them close to the photodetector. Yeah. But yeah, this is not